opened the annual report of the Smithsonian Institution at Washington, D.C. for the year 1933. And there you'll find an article by Dr. E. S. Beiser, a professor at the University of Pennsylvania and director of the American School of Oriental Research at Baghdad in Arabia. The article is called The Historical Significance of Tepe Gora. Tepe Gora. What was it? What did it mean? Professor Spicer was there, leading an expedition.
Working east from the Persian border out towards the Sinjar Hills, covering the plains of northern Iraq, our little expedition examined several hundred mounds, many of which turned out to be the locations of communities so ancient as to have thrived and fallen before that early time when history first was recorded with stylus or chisel. But we only examined the surface of these mounds. To learn their secrets, we should have to dig into one. And so at last we selected Tepe Gora, because it appeared to be the oldest site the country had yet presented. There it stood, a tall conical mound outlined against the foothills of southern Kurdistan, rich with priceless clues for the archaeologist, for the historian seeking to pull back the veil that covers time prehistoric and reveal bright, clear-cut history. What might this mound contain? Before beginning operations, we had to obtain permission from the owner to dig up the hill. And so I found myself in the venerable presence of Ali Bey, a wealthy Arab and member of one of the oldest families of the neighboring town of Mosul. I was received by the Bey and his son with all the courtesy of an everyday greeting in the East. But at last, we got down to the business at hand. The Bey questioned me with a wealth of intelligent interest.
You have made a preliminary investigation of the hill, Professor?
Oh, yes, indeed. I've wandered all over it and examined the surface with the very greatest care.
You feel convinced, then, it is likely to disclose important secrets of the past?
Oh, yes, yes. I feel that to be very likely. Of course, one never can be sure about such matters. Yet all over the slopes of the hill, I found objects exposed to view by the rain of the centuries washing away the surface.
Yes, yes. My son here...
Yes, Professor. I have been there myself one or two times. There is some broken pottery strewn around here and there. I never gave to it much consideration.
Yes, pottery and a few other things. Things made of copper and stone. Knives, hatchets.
Nothing of any value, though. No treasure.
Well, that depends upon how you look at it. These things are not works of art. They haven't the same sort of value one assigns to the wonderful objects from the tomb of King Tutankhamun, for example. In this hill, we never shall find couches of ebony inlaid with gold and ivory, nor shall we find vases of silver nor precious jewels.
Then of what value are they, Professor?
Well, to the true archaeologist, they are of great value because they're a fruitful source of information on an early, little-known chapter in the story of man. Intrinsically, they're worthless when compared with the gorgeous trappings from the tomb of Tutankhamun. But as a contribution to knowledge, they're priceless.
I see, I see.
He lived only about 3,300 years ago, this King Tutankhamun. Is this not so?
Yes. And the ruins of the watchtower resting on the uppermost lair of your hill, sir, antedate Tutankhamun by more than 150 years. And perhaps 15 older cities lie beneath it, each built on the ruins of the one that preceded it.
The first must have been very old.
Well, there's no telling quite how old.
Not till you dig down and look.
Not till we dig down and look. Possibly then we shall know.
Then, Professor, you have my permission. Go on and dig there if you wish. Go dig the whole hill away.
Digging away a hill that is a good deal larger than a football field and more than 70 feet in height is a task requiring workmen and equipment, all of which costs money. I received a small grant of $500, which would permit us to make a trial dig into Tepe Gora. I hired a small force of laborers and together with the architect of the staff made plans for the excavation.
How wide shall we make the trench, Spicer?
5 meters. We shall begin on level ground, a short distance from the base of the mound, and work our way by successive steps to the top. Each section is to be 5 meters long.
Our object, as I understand it, Spicer, is to remove a few layers from each of these sections.
Exactly. I want to get samples, as it were, of each civilization. Just samples, mind you. Our money won't last a month. But with what we turn up now, some few things perhaps that will represent the entire history of this place. That perhaps will go back some 6,000 or 7,000 years. With traces of that to show, it may be that we shall interest some sponsor and obtain sufficient means to go ahead with this work.
Yes. Yes, I hope we do. Shall we get underway?
Oh, by all means, yes. Now, I think we'd best begin right here, near the base of the southeast slope. Let's mark off the boundaries of the trench and start the men digging.
I'll do that at once, Dr. Spicer.
For 15 days, we proceeded with a force of about 60 laborers. And though we hardly more than scratched the mound, the objects we uncovered represented three distinct periods in its history. Early Gora, the bottom layers of the mound, rendered up to us objects dating back to 7,000 years ago. A type of painted pottery. Also tools and weapons made from hard stone, imported from the Armenian mountains. Middle Gora, the layers between 6 and 8 from the top of the mound, produced the first traces of the use of copper. This period was remarkable, though, for its fine architecture. A new race of people may have moved in then, for the quest of copper kept all peoples on the move in those days, and there was much fighting, with the bearers of metal weapons proving always the stronger. Middle Gora ended about 5,000 years ago. In the upper 5 layers of the mound, we discovered traces of the true Bronze Age, when metal was in full use for everything from frying pans to vanity cases. And this civilization came to an end 1,400 years before the birth of Christ. But now we were obliged to abandon our work, for our funds had all run out. 3 years later, we returned, though, with a fully staffed expedition and attacked Tapigora from the top, shaving it down layer by layer, and a wondrous story unfolded itself before us. To be sure, we were obliged to read the end of the story first, and not yet has the very beginning been told in detail, for the great mound of many cities still rises from the plains to half its original height. Down through 8 separate and distinct cities we went. The very last of these had become a ruin nearly 2,000 years before the birth of Christ. While as far back, perhaps, as 7,000 years ago.
Far have we journeyed, my people, long and far. Down from the eastern mountains we have come, driven by wild, war-loving neighbors. I wish them joy of their hills. My people, we have made a move. That is good. Here before us there lies a fertile plain. Here we find water, a brook, clear springs. Here let us stay and build our homes again. Here let our cattle graze. The grass is green.
Here in the ruins of the cities, ruins on top of ruins, clear records of generations that were born and died. Centuries passed. I could see they had built their homes, raised their herds, fashioned their pottery, and adorned it with painted designs. From the brittle flint, they made their tools and weapons.
Let me see, son.
Oh, how does that look? Does it look like a pretty good spearhead?
No, no. That's not the way to chip flint. You must not chip off such big pieces. Like this. Look. See?
Let me try.
There, you spoiled another spearhead.
Well, there's still a big enough piece for a meat scraper, isn't there?
Yes, but don't you touch it. We can't afford such waste these days. Perhaps you forget that every bit of flint or obsidian we use here must be brought by caravan all the way from the quarries of the mountains of Armenia. What are you hammering there?
Not flint.
You don't have to tell me that.
It's the soft reddish metal.
Are you fooling with that stuff again? Throw it away. It's no good.
Oh, please don't make me throw it away. I found it myself. I was out with the fellas hunting in the mountains one day, and I found it lying beside some rocks.
Well, what of it? What good is the stuff? You're not the first one to discover copper, and you're not the only idiot to waste time playing with it either. I've seen men try to make knives out of it. One man made a knife and tried to cut meat.
Well, did it cut?
I don't know. I didn't pay any attention. Why should I? What was good enough for my father and my grandfather is good enough for me. I don't want any copper knives. What's that you've fashioned?
Well, it's supposed to be a knife.
Let me see it.
Well, here. I don't know whether or not it'll cut, but
oh, my finger! Oh. I almost cut it off. Take that!
Oh!
And that!
Oh.
Make a knife that would cut my finger, eh? Let me see if it'll cut the roast. Huh. Cuts all right. But the edge is soft and bends too easily. I believe this stuff would do better for trinkets or ornaments.
In the crumbled ruins of the cities, I watched the centuries pass. Pestilence, fire, invasion, they followed each other at Gora. And cities were leveled and sprang from the ashes again. The pile was growing. Now it was a broad, flat mound rising above the plain. And the age of stone had passed into the stone copper age, when copper was being used, but still was a luxury, and stone was the order of the day. Early Gora is gone now, and we have come to the middle. It is 5,000 years ago, and we're in the eighth layer down from the very top of the mound. In this time, the city fathers gathered together and...
Here to what remains of this ruined hall, we come. Fire has destroyed our city. We must plan anew. Let our plans be wise. You, over there by the ruined portal, speak.
The gods set this fire upon us. It came from the sky. In our city, there was no beauty. The temple was an unholy vision. The houses were square and small and jumbled closely together. The streets were narrow. Why did we live this way?
He speaks with wisdom. Let us build a different city.
What shall our city be like? How shall it be?
Let him who first spoke of this make the plans.
Yes, let him do it. His house was the finest in the city. He planned his house himself, and then he built it. Let him plan our whole city.
And so indeed it was done. Four temples, laid out with spacious approaches and surrounded by gardens and courtyards, formed the center of the new town, which was built up all around in orderly fashion. And I could see that in these temples, vaulted arches were used, perhaps for the first time in history. And I could see that now, as the fame of these shrines spread abroad, the city became overcrowded. New buildings were added. The courtyards and gardens disappeared, so the city lost much of its beauty. Not till generations later was this stately Acropolis restored to some of its former dignity. And now the mound of Gora was lifting its head into the age of metal. And all the peoples of the hills and the deserts and the plains were moving about, great restless surges of humanity, in quest of the ore that gave precious copper. And Gora was the scene of many a massacre and destruction. Stone tools and weapons were giving way rapidly to metal. And the use of metals was the stronger, and progress was afoot. Everywhere civilization was on the march. And in Gora, the charm of the fine old city, with its temples and its Acropolis, all this is lost. We are now in a modern age. Houses are stacked together like too many blocks. There are modern conveniences and improvements, but there is little that is beautiful. Beneath the pavements of the narrow streets, there are very efficient sewers. But arched doorways to buildings and painted designs on pottery are not to be thought of now. All of this a mere 6 feet above the ancient lair of an earlier, more leisurely age. Now it is the marketplace, rather than the temple, that is the center of Gora's activity.
You are doing well now, but, Dabba, 8 oxen it is you have now.
8 oxen, yes. 4 wagons with coverings of waterproof woolen cloth over the top to protect the goods inside and for my drivers to sleep in nights when they take their long journey.
You trade now with the North?
Yes, I'm branching out now. All 4 teams go north this time. They go to the mountains. Up into the land where the rich copper ore comes easily from the ground.
Oh, you carry a cargo of tools, eh?
Tools, yes. Also wheat and vases. All kinds of ornaments made out of metal. Pins and needles, too. Up there, they're not very clever at working with metals. Too bad. They have all the stuff, and they don't know how to use it.
Well, you'll soon be getting rich now, Badabo.
Oh, don't worry about that, my friend. I have a wife at home. She will manage very well to keep me poor. Don't worry. Why, I've no doubt that at this very moment, she is standing in front of that expensive, polished copper mirror I had to buy her for her birthday this year.
My husband is very successful. He has 4 wagons now and 8 oxen. And he gives me anything I want. Yes, he's quite mad about me.
What shade is that rouge you're using?
What shade? Yes. This? Mm-hmm. Oh, this is Babylonian. It matches my complexion exactly. I think it goes well, don't you?
My dear, I think it's exquisite. I like it so much better than that Egyptian henna you used to smear on.
My dear, the merchants demand so much in trade for it, but it's worth it. What did you say, my dear?
Mm? Oh, I said it's exquisite.
Oh, don't you just adore my vanity? It's made of hammered copper.
I think it's perfectly beautiful.
These anklets came from Ur. My husband had them made specially for me.
Mm, yes, I guess he would have to, wouldn't he?
Now, you must see my kitchen. Come this way. It's just down the hall here.
Oh, my dear, what a lovely copper frying pan. I suppose you do a great deal of frying, don't you?
Oh, yes. Yes, that is my slave girl, does it?
Oh.
My husband thrives on all sorts of fatty food.
Yes, you must eat them, too. What's that in there?
In the closet?
Yes.
Oh, that's just the tools and things.
Oh.
That is my husband's spear and dagger.
Mm-hmm.
And that, it's a sickle for cutting the grass. And this? An axe for chopping the kindling. Oh, we do have everything.
I should say so.
Our little home really is getting too small for us. People in our position, you know.
Yes, I know.
We probably shall build a larger house for the next year or so. Oh, my husband is such a dear. He'll do anything for me. And he's so successful. And he does it all for me. Why, look at another woman. He'd never think of it.
No, of course not.
Now, there are some women who are never satisfied.
Yes, indeed. Modern times were Angora. Traffic with Russia, with Babylon, with Egypt. A varied population and a cosmopolitan atmosphere. Metal in general use. And rustle, bustle, prosperity. All these things I could determine from the architecture, from the articles of foreign importation found throughout the 6th level of the ancient mound of Gora. This was in comparatively recent times, a mere 4,000 years ago. Still, Tepe Gora rose, and the higher it became, the smaller became the surface on top for building. Another 500 years and a massive shrine stood there, not much else. No longer was it a city. People from the countryside all around may have come to worship, but no longer did it support a population. 2,000 years before Christ. Next, it's a small fort. Finally, not even that. 1500 B.C., a lowly watchtower rested on the crumbled ruins of many cities, and the watchman in his solitary perch looked out over the flat plain of Shinar and saw to the south of him the flickering lights of Nineveh. And 1,000 years before the birth of Christ, Gora was already a lofty and mysterious mound, concealing no one knew what, though many a passing stranger may have wondered. We wondered, and we excavated and found out. Down through 8 cities at least, counting through the stratums of remains which we unearthed, we obtained the astounding number of 26 building levels which Gora had stored up for modern archaeology. Each of these stages represents so many stages in the progress of prehistoric and early historic man. It is fairly characteristic of the immense antiquity of Tepe Gora that the mound ends with a civilization which modern archaeology has barely begun to appreciate. Shepherds of old may have watched their flocks around the foot of Tepe Gora and drowsily mused about treasures buried within. Today, these treasures are no longer imaginary. Archaeology has rescued them from their obscurity and turned them into milestones of ancient time. It is worthy of observation that although the excavation of Tepe Gora was begun by the American schools of Oriental research in Baghdad, composed of a number of universities and other educational institutions who contributed considerable money and most of the scientific staff, Yet the material results of the excavations, pottery, jewelry, etc., museum objects, have been unselfishly assigned by them to the contributing University of Pennsylvania, the scientific record being their sole interest. It is indeed an excellent instance of unselfish scientific effort.